98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
It is time for the 4 o'clock reset, and we will start with the Cardinals officially making their final cuts to get their roster down to 53 men. Gambo, obviously some complications thrown in there at the last second, but they, in terms of the actual players that they officially released today, I wouldn't say any big surprises on that list, would you?
No, and I think we'll wait now to see which of those guys end up on the practice squad. And as you know, with the 53-man roster, I mean, there's always a chance that you make the team and all of a sudden they find somebody they like and then you're off the team and, you know, a day later. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's set in stone what the roster is right now.
Some of the names that you might recognize if you're just driving around right now, Josh Morrow, Bernard Sykovits, the guy they were calling Psycho at tight end, Greg Dortch, Chris Banjo, we talked about a little bit yesterday. That one's the one that makes maybe makes you raise your eyebrows. Kylie Fitz on the list too, but for the most part, not anybody that is a major surprise, at least not from yesterday to today.
No, and I said Wiggins will probably be a practice squad guy. I think Whitaker will be a practice squad guy. So some of these guys that were cut will definitely be on a practice squad. You can put Wiggins and Whitaker. I believe both of those guys will be on it.
Sticking in the NFL, Cam Newton was released by the Patriots today. Ooh. So not just that Mac Jones is going to be the starting quarterback, Gambo, they just flat out released Cam Newton too. This is Adam Schefter.
So what is his market? I would say it's been what it's been the past two off seasons, kind of flat.
Well, that's for Cam Newton.
I just want to know. I mean, is there any chance that Mac Jones was really that kid in the commercial with Cam when he said, you know, someday I'm going to take your job and I'm going to replace you? I mean, they kind of look alike. I know. I mean, Mac Jones was probably about that kid's age, you know, when Cam came in. I mean, just any thought. Is there any chance that Mac Jones is that kid that was in the Cam Newton commercial?
How great would that be if that came out? I mean, obviously, I think we would have known by now, but how great of a story would that have been if he was the one?
Yeah, that was a Play 60 commercial or whatever it was.
Yeah. And
kid's like, someday I'm going to take your job. It was such a funny commercial.
Well,
I'm going to be your mom's favorite player. Remember that? You remember
it? Oh, yeah, it was an NFL commercial. Yeah, Play 60.
Okay,
great.
That commercial was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, the kid was probably about 12. So, yeah.
I mean, maybe it's just, you know, just think maybe it's a possibility.
Never know. Well, either way, Cam Newton's out there now. One guy that's not out there at the quarterback position is Josh Rosen, who made the Falcons' final roster, and many are expecting him to become the backup quarterback behind Matt Ryan.
Yeah, Josh played really well in a short amount of time in the one preseason game. He threw the only touchdown pass of the preseason for the Falcons. Now, we'll see with cutdowns if they, you know, they – if Arthur Smith sees somebody that he likes better than Josh Rosen. But for now, Josh Rosen has landed with the Atlanta Falcons. He had been with the 49ers for most of the preseason. They released him. And when A.J. McCarron went down with a knee injury, they needed a backup quarterback. So they're keeping Rosen on their final 53-man roster. He'll probably be Ryan's backup because he's got more experience than Felipe Franks does.
It shouldn't come as a surprise how quickly things can change in the NFL. But, man, Gambo, it feels like it's been driven home the last week or so with Rosen reviving his career and Malcolm Butler retiring abruptly in the last 24 hours. That's just two major examples of how quickly everything can change in this league.
No, I think the Cam Newton thing kind of came by surprise. But I mean, the Malcolm Butler thing, total surprise. So yeah. There's teams that are, you know, there are teams that are dealing with surprise cuts and things like that. But I don't think anything was bigger than Cam not getting the starting job in New England.
And the D-backs will play game two of their series at the Padres tonight. Last night, a mistake-filled loss that saw Torey Lovello chewing his team out from the dugout. Torey talked to us about that moment when he joined us earlier today.
Well, I wanted to believe so before we stepped out there, and we did everything in our normal ways in our pregame, and everything was full systems go. But you know, you saw the same thing I did. We fumbled a couple snaps and misplayed a bunch of routine plays, in my opinion, and that's unacceptable. So we need to be better. I need to be better. The coaches need to coach better, and the players need to play better. That's the bottom line.
It was humiliating. It was humiliating to watch them throw the ball around like they were lupus in the Bad News Bears. I mean, it's what it was. I mean, they couldn't field the bunt. Two times in a row, they couldn't field the bunt. You almost felt like the Padres could have just bunted every time up and they would have won the game 12-0. Like, it was embarrassing. And I was embarrassed for them. Pavin Smith overthrowing the cutoff guy and the catcher. The three guys going for a bunt, nobody covering first base. It's stuff that just has to be cleaned up. I mean, Torrey's got to get on that. That stuff has to get cleaned up.
Yeah, frustrating mistakes. They've been playing better, but you lose games like that, and it just drives you insane, especially if you're the manager. But our top story today, of course, and it was going to be our top story anyway, and we had some audio loaded from Cliff Kingsbury earlier today, but a lot of that audio is kind of out the window now because, in case you're just joining us, yeah, Malcolm Butler is officially on the retired reserve list. So the Cardinals now do not have the guy that they went out and acquired a few months ago to be their number one corner. He's, at least for now, Gambo, he's retired.
Yeah, it's a shocker to all of us. I mean, at this point, I mean, we're in September tomorrow. Malcolm Butler retires when camp is just about over. I don't think any of us saw this coming. He had not played great in the preseason. He was getting outplayed by Marco Wilson and by Byron Murphy. And, you know, but, you know, kind of, you know, Robert Alford has his Pro Football Focus coverage grades weren't great either. I think he just wrote that off as the guys, you know, veteran guys just trying to get a little work in and not going, you know, all out the way a Marco Wilson or, you know, Byron Murphy was, a younger player. But Malcolm Butler was brought in here to replace Patrick Peterson. He was brought in here to be a number one or number two cornerback, and now he's not here. The depth of the Cardinals is not great at that position, which is why I know they are scouring the waiver wires right now, looking at the players that were released. I imagine they'll respond very quickly and grab one of these players or maybe even two of these players. But I will continue to say that if anybody's thinking that they're going to get somebody that's going to come in and be a number one or number two quarterback, I mean, how? Those guys don't get released.
Mm-mm.
They don't. I mean, they just don't get released. I mean, nobody's saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to release my second-best cornerback. I mean, it just doesn't happen. So the guy that they likely get is very unlikely to be better than Byron Murphy, Robert Alford, or Marco Wilson.
Yeah.
That's just the truth. And I'm just warning everybody. They're going to get a guy that will be a depth guy. Now, I think the guy that they get could be their fourth-best guy, but it's very unlikely that they're going to find a guy at this stage in the process that's going to be better than Marco Wilson, Robert Alford, or Byron Murphy. I doubt that that is going to happen.
Well, and to that point, I mean, not only are our teams not going to release their first or second best corner, but with a week and a half before the season starts, they're probably not going to be willing to trade that guy either. You know what I mean? Like, there was all that talk that C.J. Henderson might get dealt from Jacksonville at some point, and then yesterday they traded his backup, essentially. And now, a week and a half away from the start of the season, if you're going to get a guy like that, especially when teams know the position you're in, you're going to have to probably overpay. And are the Cardinals going to disrupt the rest of their roster for that position if there's even an option out there?
I think you explore trades, but I don't, you know. You know, is can you trade for it? You're not going to trade for anybody's first or second cornerback. Could you trade for a team's fourth or fifth cornerback and you think that guy's better than any of the release guys? Look, I was looking at the cut wire just now, and every team has released four or five cornerbacks, okay? Every team has. So there's 100-plus cornerbacks that were on rosters yesterday that aren't on rosters today. So can you find a guy or two that you like? Probably. I mean, it's very likely they're going to find somebody they like, but at what level do you like? Can they find a guy that's good enough to be their fourth cornerback? Depth and insurance at that position. That's what you're looking for right now.
Feel pretty confident we know what Steve Keim and Vance Joseph are doing right now, huh? You got that list of 100 corners, and they're just, I would assume.
They're going through film. Yeah, what you do is you go through the names. There's certain names you like. You've got a board already up, so you kind of know. You look at guys that you've liked in the draft. You look at guys that you've had your eye on for a year or two. And if you like a guy, then you go back and you look at tape. And you watch tape after tape after tape, and you just see how he's playing. And then you make a determination on that. You make some calls. You find out if he's a good locker room guy. You find out if he's a good, you know, could be a good teammate. Is he any issues, any problem? You got, like, there's a lot of homework that goes into it. It's not just like, hey, let's just grab that guy. You know, there's a lot of homework that goes into grabbing a guy that you're going to bring in to be one of your 53 men on the roster.
Text Sparky to 620-620 and kick off the college football season with your favorite Arizona sports host and special guest for our Valley Virtual Series presented by 72 Sold, where you can get a higher price. Plus, we'll be giving away college football tickets. So text Sparky to 620-620. When we come back, it's being called a new era in New England. What does that mean for the AFC East and the rest of the league? A big move by the Patriots today. We'll get into that next. It's the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. That's the Burns and Gambo Show. Luke Lipinski in for Dave Burns today. Gambo, the Patriots, kind of a surprise move here today, a double move. First they name Mac Jones the starter, then they just flat out cut Cam Newton. So that era is quickly over, and the new era, the Mac Jones era, is here.
Yeah, they, you know, a lot of people were surprised by that they decided to go in a different direction. They go with Mac Jones. And Mac Jones, first week, Dolphins, Patriots, Tua won a championship for Alabama against Mac Jones, won a championship for Alabama. Matter of fact, Mac replaced Tua. So that's going to be an interesting first game when they take each other on. Cam Newton said, hey, don't feel sorry for me. He's going to hook on with somebody. He signed a contract that guaranteed him $2.5 million, so he's going to get that no matter what. There's a lot of teams that will line up for Cam. The Dallas Cowboys could be a team that grabs him. There's several others that are looking at him, mainly to be a veteran backup on a team.
This is Adam Schefter talking about what this means across the board for New England.
Rather than put Cam in a position that might be a little bit awkward, they thanked him and said, we are ready to go with the youngster. The new Patriot era begins now. We're not wasting another second. And so they turn over everything to Mac Jones, which was coming, and everybody could see it was coming. The only question was it going to be week one or two? But they decided, obviously, Bill Belichick did, that this was the time.
I mean, Gambo, Mac Jones was with the 15th pick in the draft. He's the fifth quarterback taken in this draft. And to be a rookie starting, and not because of injury or anything, not because you were forced into the situation, a starting rookie quarterback in week one for Bill Belichick, they must be impressed.
Yeah, Belichick said in late July that Mac Jones could win that Patriots starting quarterback job.
Yeah.
So he never really just said, hey, Cam's my guy. But, you know, from the second he got into OTAs and minicamp, I mean, he played well. And, you know, Belichick in June talked about how much respect he's earned from his teammates. And then, you know, and he was playing really well in the mini camps. And then when training camp started, he started to play really well. And he closed the gap on Cam. And he just passed him. So they decided to make the move and have him start now. I think we're all surprised by it. But, you know, I think there was a practice against the Giants. And he played really, really well. And then Cam's been out. With the COVID issues, he was out. So Patriots went unbeaten in the preseason. You look at Mac Jones' last game, 10-14, 156 yards and a touchdown, led three scoring drives against the Giants. Hey, I think that was enough, and I think at that point, Belichick was sold that he's the guy.
This is Mike Reese, the Patriots ESPN reporter.
Mac Jones has come along faster than I believe Bill Belichick anticipated, and so maybe initially his thought was, let's take it slow and make sure we don't move too fast with him. Mac has shown he can handle it, Greeny. So Belichick basically saying, why wait?
Remember, New England was trying to get ahead of New Orleans was trying to get ahead of New England to get Mac Jones.
Yeah.
So the Saints, and I remember this very well because we do a very long draft show here. The Saints really wanted to get Mac Jones. So they were trying to move ahead of that 15th pick so the Saints could get him. That's the guy the Saints wanted really bad, is they wanted to draft Mac Jones, but they weren't able to get ahead of the Patriots, and the Patriots ended up taking him.
Well, here's the tweet from the NFL and CBS. With an average age of 23 years, 229 days, the quarterbacks of the AFC East would be the youngest ever Week 1 starters by a division since the 1970 merger, Gambo. So you got Josh Allen, you got Tua, you got Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, and an average age when the season starts next week of just over 23 years old.
Listen, I told you, go back to that 1983 draft, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Bills got Jim Kelly. The Dolphins got Dan Marino. The Colts got John Elway, who they traded. The Jets got Kenny O'Brien. And the Patriots got Tony Eason. Like, there was, like, that 1983 draft, every single team in the AFC East drafted a quarterback in that famed 1983 class.
And that
every single one.
That's maybe the greatest quarterback class of all time.
Yes.
You look at these four quarterbacks, and they're not all from the same class, obviously, but, I mean, they're all very young. I don't know what's realistic 4 years from now. How many of these guys are starting for these teams? You know, Josh Allen, unless injury, he's going to be locked in. So then it's, you know, is it Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, and Tua? Is it just going to be one of those other guys? I mean, right now the future looks so bright for all of those guys, but you know, Zach Wilson's on the Jets, and Tua might get traded tomorrow.
But let's see what happens with the Josh Rosen class, right? I mean, Josh Rosen hasn't established himself. Sam Darnold, we don't know. I mean, he may end up being a backup quarterback in this league. So you might have two guys right there that, you know, that didn't work out in that class.
Yeah.
You know, Jackson looks good. Baker Mayfield looks good. Josh Allen looks good. But Rosen, you know, I mean, obviously he's been on like five different teams now, and Sam Darnold's on his second team. So we'll judge that class. But this one, I don't know. I mean, Belichick, he decided to go with the young guy over the veteran. And, you know, Belichick watched last year as Tom Brady left and won a Super Bowl with Tampa. And I'm sure that Belichick wants to win badly. And he must obviously feel that Mac Jones gives them a better chance to win right now.
As far as places that Cam could go, here's more from Schefter.
He was a free agent quarterback this past offseason. And he did resign in New England at a contract value that was not commensurate with what you would expect of a former MVP and a starting quarterback. And that meant that the market wasn't there. So the market was soft for him this offseason. The market wasn't there for him last offseason. It's two straight off seasons where teams have not been exactly knocking down Cam's door. And now he's been released by the Patriots. So what is his market? I would say it's been what it's been the past two off seasons. Kind of flat.
You do kind of wonder if maybe we're heading towards the end here for Cam. And he's younger than some of these quarterbacks that are still starting in this league and looking
by
good.
By a lot.
Yeah.
By a lot.
One MVP. What was that, 2015? He was the NFL MVP? Like this, it's but at the same time, it's been a couple years of this. Like once you start bouncing around and you're not really a starter anywhere, that's not a great sign, obviously.
You know, there's the Dallas Cowboys make sense. How about the Denver Broncos? I mean, yeah. Denver Broncos could be a team that could get him.
That's an interesting one. That is an interesting one. I mean, you're not going to sign him to be your quarterback if you're a team that's in rebuild mode. So it's got to be a team that feels like they are in it this year. And you had that list earlier. I know you had the Colts and the Cowboys on there, the Washington football team. Yeah, Denver kind of makes sense in that regard, too. Like, it's – could you see Carolina taking him back? That was on that list, too. I don't see that one happening.
It's a different regime, though, so, you know, maybe. How about Ron Rivera in Washington, who was with him in Carolina?
That one almost makes the most sense to me, because to me it's either them or Dallas.
They got no quarterback in Washington.
They don't. And if you're Cam and you have a say in this, like you mentioned earlier, do you really want to go to Dallas and be Dak's backup, even if it's not, like, steady that he's, you know, that Dak's 100% good to go all season? You'd rather go to Washington.
I don't think – look, they spent 9 years together. And they won four. I mean, think about this. Let's just go through this. Ron Rivera, Cam Newton together for 9 years. They won four NFC South titles. They went to a Super Bowl together. Newton was an MVP under Ron Rivera.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the deal. So you start to think about these things. Where did Cam have his most success? With Ron Rivera. How long were they together? 9 years. What did they do? They went to a Super Bowl. He won an MVP. And they won four NFC South titles. But, like, times have changed. Like he's not that Cam Newton anymore. He's not the Cam Newton in 2015. Now this is 2021.
Yeah,
this is 6 years later. This is not the 15-1 season where he won the MVP.
Well,
it's a different quarterback.
He hasn't looked like that guy for a few years too. It's not like this is just abruptly happening. Text us your thoughts on the FanDuel text line at 620-620. Right now, when we come back, we'll jump over to baseball. The Diamondbacks in the midst of a four-game losing streak, and last night in particular was especially frustrating. It's the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Well, it wasn't good last night, Gambo. The D-backs losing, and we'll get into that in just a second. Right now, though, Sarah's here. It's time for the Twitter poll update.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Every time I do a different one of these shows, you're on at a different time, Sarah, and I always forget.
What do you mean?
Well, it's the same two times every day.
Yes, it's true.
Unless we have Tori Lavello on, which then it's 2:45 or whatever.
Well, yeah, it's true. Could make, depending on a guest, it could be changed a little bit. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Luke, you better tighten this up before you host your own show starting next week.
Yeah, it's going to be. Yeah. Maybe I should work on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's not make it too complicated.
Still got four more days. Finally.
Yeah, are we like the guinea pig? Is this like the practice sessions for Luke right now?
We're the warm up.
Every time I look up, Sarah's there, but some shows she's on at 1, other shows she's 2:30 and 4:30 like that. I'm sorry.
It's really all afternoon that I'm here.
It's true.
All right, let's get into the poll question,
please.
Everybody. When we published this before the show, Malcolm Butler had not yet retired, but that situation was still the inspiration for today's poll, with Cliff Kingsbury saying earlier today that Marco Wilson, the rookie, will be ready to start if he is needed to start. So we're asking, of these three rookies, which do you think will be most important to the Cardinals this year? Zaven Collins, Rondale Moore, or Marco Wilson?
It's a good question. I went with Zaven Collins, even though you could really make the argument for Marco Wilson now.
Yeah,
I'm going to make the argument for Marco Wilson now, just because at that position it feels like something that, especially in this division with Russell Wilson and Matthew Stafford and whoever's playing quarterback for the 49ers even, they're going to try to exploit the rookie corner. Now, that doesn't mean he can't do his job, but it's important now, I would say more so than anybody else, that he does do his job, because he's probably starting from week one.
Yeah. Well, at 2:30, Zaven Collins had the lead, but as expected, it is now flipped. 45% of our voters say Marco Wilson is now the most important rookie for the Cardinals.
So, do you know what's fascinating about this?
Huh. What?
We very rarely have a flip.
I know.
Yeah.
It's usually
from 2:30 to 4:30.
Yeah.
Which we're giving ourselves away if we're like, ooh, we'll see what happens at 4:30 and nothing changes. But this time it did.
See, now this makes everybody have to stay tuned.
Every time. You never know.
No, I love that. I mean, a lot of times, well, you know, the results change a little bit, but whatever was in the lead is usually in the lead.
That's right.
This is a flip.
45%.
I like that.
5% are Marco Wilson, 42%. Zaven Collins, 13%, Rondale Moore.
I have to ask, because yesterday, Sarah, you so blatantly led the voters to vote for Larry Fitzgerald. Did you convince Malcolm Butler to retire so Marco Wilson would move back into the lead here?
Yes, I work extra hard to make sure my poll questions are popping every day.
It's the kind of commitment you get.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right, that one works. That's the Sanderson Ford poll question. If you want to flip it again, you can continue to vote on that. Sanderson Ford on 51st Avenue in Glendale, online at sandersonford.com, where they've got 0% financing on an F-150 right now. All right, continue to vote on the Burns and Gambo page. And Sarah, if it flips again, just chime in at any
time.
Okay,
deal. I'll come in with the breaking news sounder.
Yes.
All right.
Nice. That'll really throw me off. You'll be here after 4:30. I won't know what to do. All right, switching gears to the D-backs. Campo, I got to say, I haven't done a show with you before where you got one of the guests to say you were making their blood pressure rise, but you did get that out of Torrey Lovello.
Do we have that sound?
I don't know if we have one. We have some sound here, so I'll play some of these and see if we have that specific one. But look, the game last night was horrible, not just the 7-5 loss, but the miscues that you compared to the bad news Bears earlier today, and the D-backs have lost 4 in a row. But I would say more than the losing, it's how they lose when they lose games like last night.
That was pathetic. What happened in that game last night was absolutely pathetic. I mean, they really should be embarrassed with the way that they played. And, you know, it was tough to harp on that with Torrey for so much, but it just had to be done. I mean, at booting the round, there were two bunts last night that the Padres laid down that the Diamondbacks didn't execute properly. I mean, it's a bunt. You practice it every day. They didn't get any outs. Two bunts, they got no outs. One bunt, Walker picked it up, and Varsho ran into him, and he dropped the ball. And the other bunt, that three guys went for it. The pitcher went for it. Walker went for it. Rojas went for it. Nobody decided to cover first base. Three guys went for the ball. Pavin Smith overthrows the cutoff guy. A throw from right field to home, sails past the catcher. I mean, and even Torrey last night, Tatis with a base open. Why are you pitching to Fernando Tatis with the base open? Like, you know, you're not pitching to Fernando Valenzuela. It's Fernando Tatis.
Not even Fernando Tatis Sr., Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yes, it's Fernando Tatis you're pitching to, not Fernando Valenzuela. You got an open base. I mean, don't you walk Fernando Tatis?
I would walk him every time he was up the way he did.
I don't want to get beat by Tatis. That's the guy I don't want to get beat by.
You asked him about, because look, this all added up to Torrey blowing up on his team in the dugout, and so you asked him about that, and this is what he had to say.
Yeah, I wish I could hold it in, but you're right. Sometimes it gets the best of me, and I'm a human being, and I have the same emotions that every fan that was watching the game was feeling, every fan that was here at the stadium. you know, I just bubbled over with my frustration, and it's been a rough year, and I've sat on it for a little while, and every once in a while it comes out like it did last night. And, you know, that's me trying to ring their bell and say, look, we got to come in and lock it in, I think is where I went with that. Like, let's figure this out. And we need to make sure that we got seven of the best innings that we're going to go out and play and catch these guys and win this baseball game, because nobody walks over us on our baseball field. That's kind of what I said to the group. That's what I remember kind of directed as. It was my time to get their attention and say, we might not have been as prepared as I wanted us to be, and now it's time to reload, re-engage. And they did. We played catch-up. But you're right, if we just play pitch and catch, and that's just a very generic term, right, for everybody to understand, that if we just do our job the way we're supposed to do it, it would have been a totally different outcome in the game.
They're 9-9 in their last 18. So, I mean, when you look at that, okay, whatever. It's not great, but it's not as bad as it was earlier this year. But the game last night specifically, and you brought this up earlier, Gambo, and I think this is really the crux of the situation. The game last night was like an unacceptable loss, even though it doesn't really matter in the standings. And it's not the only time we've seen that this year where they just look confused.
No. I think Torrey said there's been 20 games like that this year.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's frustrating, right? I mean, there's 20 games in which your guys are, you know, failing to execute routine plays, and you lose a baseball game over it. Look, you know, that first inning, Tyler Gilbert picks off the runner on first. I think it was Grisham. Picks off the runner on first. Christian Walker makes a throw to Rojas at second base, but somehow throws it behind the runner. The ball actually went through his back. Rojas has to catch it on the other side of the bag, and he can't make the tag, and the runner is safe. The very next pitch, Fernando Tatis hits a two-run homer. That was the third out of the inning. You picked the guy off. You're out of the inning just to just make a good throw. And Walker makes an atrocious throw. Now, listen, he's a nice guy. He is a nice guy. I don't want him as the everyday first baseman. I don't mind him as a backup. I don't mind him as the 15th. I don't want him as the everyday first baseman. He's just not good enough. And so to me, I just, you know, I see that play, and it's just like, oh, it's gut-wrenching. It just seems like they were not ready to play in that game. They weren't prepared to play. That's on the coaching staff. That's on Torrey. He knows it. He's owning it. I mean, yeah, we got him to the point where he says, you're trying to make my blood pressure boil. Hey, listen, we're just bringing up facts here. Like, they, you know, the team didn't seem ready to play. There were a lot of mistakes made in a game, and it's, you know, Diamondback fans should find that unacceptable. I mean, you know, yeah, they're losing, okay, but can you play with some passion? Can you play with some energy? Can you play with some heart? I mean, are we asking a lot? No, nobody's asking you to win 20 games in a row, but if we're going to invest our time in watching this game, can we play the game the right way? Can we just play it the right way?
That's an interesting question, because there are a lot of Diamondbacks fans that are torn on this, because they just want the first pick and what goes with that. And right now the D-backs don't have the first pick. Baltimore has it. The D-backs, I mean, I think the D-backs are a better team than Baltimore. They have those games like last night. But to your point on Christian Walker, and you asked Torrey, and he said flat out, yeah, he's playing again tonight. He's in the lineup. He's batting fourth, actually. I'm looking at the lineup right now for the game tonight. Zach Gallen on the mound. Christian Walker will be batting fourth against the Padres. So that's probably not great for your blood pressure.
I mean, no. Well, I asked this, you know, you got a guy that makes some mistakes like that. I mean, it's, listen, I don't care about the matchups. I mean, I care about the messages. What's the message? Like, this isn't the first time that he's had to go heart to heart with Christian Walker and be like, hey, dude, what are you doing? Like, there's been a few times this year where he's had to kind of go at him and stuff like that. But I don't, like, if there's no punishment, you're going to continue to get a guy that's going to, you know, maybe not give it. Like, I know he cares, so I can't say that he doesn't care. But I still think, like, hey, dude, you're not going to play. Like, you're going to make these mistakes. Like, I can't have you. You're not going to play. So I'm a little surprised that he's in the lineup tonight. And I know he likes the lefty-righty matchup, but I think it's a good time to just send a message to everybody. Like, if you are going to make mistakes like that, I got to sit you. I can't play you.
Text Sparky to 620-620 and kick off the college football season with your favorite Arizona sports hosts and special guests for our Valley Virtual Series, presented by 72 Sold, where you can get a higher price. Plus, we'll be giving away college football tickets, so text Sparky to 620-620. And when we come back, talk a little Sparky. ASU is, especially on defense, pretty loaded with NFL talent. So what does that mean for the games in front of them on this college football schedule? That's next. It's the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, I'm looking at the Valley Heat reverse retro jerseys the Sun Devils are going to wear against Colorado on September 25th. I don't know if you... These are pretty nice up on the Arizona Sports website right now, Gambo.
Okay, I'll take a look.
But the season itself starts for ASU Thursday. So 2 days from today, they will take on Southern Utah, who lost to San Jose State 45-14 this past weekend, week zero of the college football season. But here we go. I mean,
yeah, they're gonna kill them. They're gonna kill them. Like that's what's gonna happen. They're gonna destroy this team. But you know, you're looking for an indication. Last year is just they blew that game against USC. They blew the game against UCLA. That was a real ugly game. And so it's just you kind of write last year off. I mean, you just don't even look at last year because they played four games and they played two games, had to wait, they missed games. So last year, you don't take into account anything that happened last year. I love this team coming back. I do. I really think that they're loaded. I think they've got tremendous depth at running back. They got a great young quarterback. I love their defense. I think they're in a really good spot to win the Pac-12 South. And maybe even, I got to see what these other teams look like. Maybe even win the whole Pac-12. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know about the investigation. We obviously talked about the investigation earlier, but we're not now because we'll just let it play out. However it plays out, and we'll deal with it then and see what happens to the coaches and the future of ASU. They're losing some recruits. U of A is doing a really good job with recruits. Jed Fish has done a nice job so far. He's got a couple of big-time recruits, including a couple of 4-star guys. But with ASU, I think all the focus of attention should simply be on this year. And the reason why I say that is they're loaded. I mean, they're absolutely loaded. Their defense is going to be unreal. I mean, you look at that defense, with Darian Butler and Merlin Robertson and Chase Lucas and Jack Jones and so many Evan Fields. Like, they got so many good players. I expect that ASU will have a lot of guys drafted this year. They'll probably have, 9-10 guys get drafted off of this team. That's how good they are. I love their running backs. The biggest question, and we just don't know the answer to this, is just simply the wide receivers. Are they going to be good enough at wide receiver? There's talent there, but there's not experience. There's not a right now. It doesn't look like there's a N'Keal Harry or a Brandon Ayuk yet. But maybe one of these guys will emerge.
We had Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source on earlier and talked to him about that defense and how many NFL prospects he sees there.
Easily one of the best defenses in the time that I've covered or even followed ASU. Totally agree. They will challenge recent records with how many guys end up getting drafted off of this team. I think it'll probably be the most this century at a minimum, especially if they have the type of year that they're capable of. Not just those linebackers, but you look up front, Tyler Johnson's an NFL prospect when he's playing at a high level. You have Evan Fields, I think, is underrated and has a very good chance to be drafted. Jack Jones is one of the better cover corners when everything is working for him. So across the board, really, don't see any weaknesses or flaws.
I think this is why it's at least why I'm so excited about this team, Gambo, because if you are a team that can legitimately play defense in the Pac-12, we've seen this in the past with Utah and even the Huskies. Like, if you have a good defense, that's not necessarily common in this conference. So that's going to set you apart. And then when you factor in the running game and Jaden Daniels, like, this team, I could not agree more this season. I felt this way last year, and then there wasn't really a year. This team is set up to do great things. The thing is, they've never won more than 8 games under Herm Edwards, which at the time was, it was seen as progress, but now you haven't really played a full season in 2 years, so you got to actually do it.
You know, they play a lot of close football games the way Herm coaches. They play a lot. This team is going to be, they're going to run the ball a lot, okay? If they get the lead, I think they've got 3 good backs, not just 2. Nagata, the third back, is actually really good too. So I really like their running backs, and all of their running backs can catch the ball out of the backfield. So if we talk about the lack of, talent at wide receiver or just experience, I don't want to say talent. I think Ricky Pearsall could be good. I think LB Bunkley Shelton could be good. That Johnny Wilson, I don't know enough about him, but he's 6'7". Maybe he could be good. Their tight end, I think, could be really good in Curtis Hodges. But their running backs are going to catch the ball. Trainum and White can catch the ball. Nagata can catch the ball. I like their running backs. I like their tight end. And don't forget, their quarterback's going to run for 400-plus yards.
Yeah.
Like, their quarterback is going to run. You got these three running backs, and then, you know, it's kind of like having Kyler Murray with the Cardinals. You've got a running back who's going to run for 400-plus yards because he's good. So they're going to stop. They got their best offensive line probably since they had Juan Roque, Gray Rugema, the Marvel Smith year. Like, this is the best offensive line that they have had in a long time. So I like their offensive line. I think that's going to be really – it's really good. So they're going to run the ball a lot. And they've got dynamic running backs, and the biggest question mark on offense is just simply the talented wide receiver. How good are these guys?
Yeah, and we asked Cartman about that, too. You asked him, has any wide receiver separated themselves from the pack yet? Because you got talent there, like Ricky Pearsall and LV Bunkley Shelton for sure, but just not much experience. This is what he had to say.
Not enough. I think that's the best way to look at it. You mentioned all of the relevant players here. I think it's going to have to be something that they do by committee overall. Ricky Pearsall and LV Bunkley Shelton are the most reliable, I would say. Johnny Wilson has the most big play potential, but also not there yet in terms of every rep, every down, getting the job done. You have guys who can stretch the field, take the top off the defense on the outside, primarily Andre Johnson, Jordan Porter, some of Brian Thompson, as you mentioned, coming in from Utah. I think at a minimum, they have to be able to convert that deep ball opportunity to keep safeties kind of backing off and not let coordinators bring that defense down and really key on what ASU is doing in the run game, which is one of the better elements of any team in the Pac-12.
Gambo, if that's going to be the biggest weakness on this team or the biggest question mark, I think they can survive that. I mean, talent-wise, and USC is a good team too. I'm not trying to say this will be easy, but this team really should be going to the Pac-12 championship just based on talent alone.
I think so. I mean, their defense is going to keep them in just about every single game. Now, last year, again, it was just mistakes. I mean, the USC game, they had that game won. They had that game won against USC, and they absolutely blew it. The UCLA game, I mean, you know, they got down 17-0 in that game, but a lot of people may not remember this. They came back and took the lead. They were up 18-17 against UCLA. So, just didn't play well enough, you know, in those games. But they got some experience. They got some games under their belt, and they should come back this year, you know, really motivated to have a great season. I think they'll win the Pac-12 South. I really believe in this team. I really believe in their talent. I see a lot of NFL guys, a lot of guys that can get drafted on this roster. And I think it's time to, you know, we'll worry about the investigation when information comes out. And for the meantime, we got a game on Thursday, and I think it's going to be a hard game to judge. We're going to talk Friday. I don't know what we're going to say about ASU. It's not a lot to talk about when you're playing a team like that. But hopefully we'll see the emergence of some players and how good they are. We'll be able to talk about that.
It would be nice to see one or two receivers go off in that game, even though, I mean, it's Southern Utah, so how much can you ultimately take from that? But
not a lot.
October 16th at Utah and November 6th against USC are the two games, certainly, that are going to decide things in the Pac-12 South. All right, coming up, the final hour of the show, and in case you have missed it, Malcolm Butler is officially on the retired reserve list. The Cardinals put him there earlier today, so when we come back, try to figure out what options the Cardinals have at that position. That is next. It is the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.